And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Lloyd Pye, author, researcher, lecturer Lloyd Pye, has more than 30 years of experience of writing and speaking about the origins of life, human origins, hominoids, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, and others, and also the work of Zechariah Sitchin. Lloyd is also the caretaker of the famous Star Child skull and believes it could make history as big as history can be made. We'll have some updates on that tonight for you as well. Here's Lloyd Pye. Lloyd, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, George. Thanks for inviting me back. Always a pleasure to be here.
Do we have a new ancestor out there from the cold, frigid spots of Siberia?
Well, you know, they never look at the other obvious option, in my opinion, which is that it's just a hominoid. It belongs to the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or the Alma's kind. Almas are dominant in Russia. And it could easily be one of those, but of course, as you know, mainstream science isn't going to allow that possibility into the equation. But you would expect a hominoid to be substantially different from a human, not so much different from a Neanderthal, but the fact of the matter is that whatever this thing is, it is significantly different from both of those. So to me, a hominoid is the logical creature to look at, but mainstream science is not going to do that anytime soon.
How big is the story, Lloyd?
It's big. It's big. It's very big because it's as big as The Hobbit was. Let's put it that way. The problem they have with it is that they have only the sample of the – I mean, can you imagine a fingertip of a little finger?
Yes.
I mean, how'd they pick that out? How did they – what made anybody look at that and say, well, let's check this out? But, you know, whereas The Hobbit, they have nearly whole skeletons. So it's not exactly on the same scale, but in terms of meaning, in terms of putting humans in a different perspective and allowing or forcing science to look at humans in a completely different way, we're already now looking at four possible different what they call hominin types or prehuman types, because if it was out there and walked on two legs, it was ipso facto prehuman as far as they're concerned, whether it was actually hominoid or not. But it certainly has opened the door. I mean, the hobbits were a huge, huge hurdle for them to clear in their minds that
right.
such a thing could be. And now this is like, oh, well, we had the hobbits and now we've got another one. It's like this, they're just shrugging this one off as another possibility. Whereas I'm utterly convinced that the hobbits are nothing more than the little Sadapa, Agagwi, small hominoid that stories have been going around for hundreds of years, and they go right now on the very same island. People, you go there and you talk to the people of Flores, and they say, oh, yeah, it's a little hairy creature that lives in the jungles and always has been, you know, and that's what the Hobbit is. But again, mainstream science is not going to allow that into the equation.
The use of DNA is incredible now in terms of making further discoveries, isn't it?
Fantastic. It's the best thing there is. All the TV shows, you know, that use it as at their core. But what the listeners need to understand about DNA, what makes it so powerful, so incontrovertible, is it is math turned into biology. It is exact as math every time. And all you have to do is repeat it. It's repeatable in the same way that 2 + 2 = 4 every time you do it. The opposite size of a right triangle, the angles are equal to 180 degrees. All of that, it's always the same. Same thing with DNA. It is math in biology, which is, you know, it's a rare thing. So you just can't, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, it's really, really hard to argue with it when they have repeated the samplings enough times, you just can't argue.
No, not at all. Now, why do I think you have something new and remarkable to tell us about the Star Child skull?
Well, because we have been doing, speaking of DNA, we've been doing DNA testing on, finally, after, since 2003, we've been trying to find somebody who would help us with another round of testing with the new technology that was available. We didn't find a geneticist who had access to that because it's just so expensive still, $200,000. But he did have access to new techniques, dealing with primers, with human-only primers. There's a new technique called shotgunning. In 203, we didn't have that advantage. We used human-only primers that were hundreds and low thousands of base pairs long, and that's all there were. It was just you use the base pairs, you put the base pairs into the solution, and they either hooked up or they didn't. At that time in 203, we knew from the mitochondrial DNA recovery that the star child's mother was human, but when we, in six attempts, we couldn't get a nuclear DNA, which is from the mother and the father, when we couldn't get a recovery there, we knew the father was not human, was not, if it was human, we would have gotten a recovery. But mainstream science has an answer for a situation like that. They don't say, well, yeah, wow, that's really cool. You got what looks like a non-human father here. They just said, well, you just didn't get a recovery. There must be something wrong with the DNA. It's degraded or just something. You know, we all knew that wasn't the case. We needed better technique, and we have it now. And so the new geneticist applied those new techniques. And lo and behold, in the first run that he made, George, the first run, he found several examples of the star child's, but much smaller now, in the hundreds, in the low hundreds, 200 and 300 strings, base pairs long. But he found them, and they're there, and he found several which showed that the star child's nuclear DNA was part human, but also not just different from human, not just different from human the way this new find was, but not found on planet Earth at all.
Wow.
Nowhere in the database of genomes of over 100 species of plant and animal that are in logged into the database at the National Institute of Health, and none of that could he find corollaries to what he found. And he found several strings like that. So right away, right now, with just that little bit, first sample, we know what we have.
You're making progress here, aren't you?
Oh, tremendous, through the roof, over the moon. I mean, literally. So what? Just like in 203, when we knew what we had, but we couldn't prove it, the difference here is we know what we have, and we can prove it. So that's the beauty of this. So what he has to do now is he has to repeat those samplings just the way he did it the first time, two or three more times, as long as it takes us to get the money that we need now to do that testing on the 454 machine, the big gun, and get it, you know, get the whole thing sequenced and really start into it in earnest. So that's what he's doing. He's doing another sequencing run just like he did the first time, and he's going to find the same thing. There will be sequences that are human based, and there will be sequences that are not found on Earth. And as he mounts those up, critics get quieter and quieter. Now, you and I both know when he makes a formal announcement like those guys did today, this was just a letter in Nature. This is a very informal way to go about presenting this kind of information in the world of science. To do it formally, you have to do a peer-reviewed paper that appears in one of the big journals. It's a big, you know, it's a big deal. We're some distance away from that, but we're not too many weeks or maybe just a couple months, or we don't know exactly from when he can stand up to the world and do what these guys have done, which is put out, here's where we are, here's what we know, here's where we think we're going to go, kind of thing. And then let the chips fall where they may and let the critics come out and try to pick it apart, which, you know, that's what they'll do because that's their job. That's what a critic or a skeptic is all about. They have to look, you know, pick around the edges and hope that they can find a crack.
Thousands of new people coming on board every week, Lloyd. They're probably saying, okay, what's the Star Child skull? Go ahead.
Well, the Star Child skull is a real, true bone skull that was found in Mexico in about 1930, and by a girl, and she just assumed, as anybody would in 1930, that it was a deformity. And so she kept it her whole life. When she died, she passed it to some people. They kept it 5 years and passed it to another couple in El Paso, Ray and Melanie Young. And Melanie had been a neonatal nurse and she knew immediately it wasn't a deformity. And she and her husband were members of El Paso MUFON, so they knew a lot about UFOs and aliens. And they looked at it and felt that it was a skull that could go in the head of a gray very easily, based on the many descriptions of gray aliens. So she thought it could well be a gray. She showed it to me, and I was really very skeptical at first, and back in 1999, February of 99. And so I needed all of 99 to convince myself that this probably was the real deal. So I started to believe that it probably was an alien as well. And I believed that until we got the DNA test in 2003 that showed that the mother was indeed human, but the father wasn't. Now, and then the trick became what it's been since 2003, which is find a way to test the DNA that will prove what we, you know, knew to be the case. And we have that now, and it's really just pretty much a matter of putting one foot in front of the other, get the money situation squared away, which we're now working very hard to do, and then glory hallelujah, we hit a home run. It's really going to make history. It truly is.
Well, Lloyd, you know, nobody's worked harder at this than you. Gosh.
It's been 11 years. We've been doing this for a long time, you and I, haven't we?
Yeah, we really have. And I mean, I could just imagine one day when you're vindicated, and it seems like it's going that way, doesn't it?
It really does. I don't, you know, I don't want to gloat, but, you know, you can't help but gloat a little bit. This is, but see, the thing is, I've known it for a very long time. I knew it in 2003. When those guys showed me the results in 2003, I knew it, and they told me, we know it too, but we can't prove it yet. But if you wait 3 to 5 years, now I'd already waited about 5 years, but they said if you wait 3 to 5 more years, you will be able to prove this. Because there's new technology coming along that is going to give you what we can't give you now. And sure enough, that technology is there, and the price, while still egregious for our world, a couple $100,000, is really chicken feed to a lot of people, and just, you know, got to get connected with those kind of people. And like I said earlier, we're working on that very hard, and it's a whole different ballgame, George. We're selling history now. We're giving people the opportunity to get in on making history of a kind that'll just never be forgotten. So it's a very different project than it was trying to convince people to put money into something that was, to everyone's way of thinking, iffy. You know, like, well, and I would hear this all the time, well, if what you're saying is true and legitimate, why hasn't it been on the news? Why hasn't science announced it? Why doesn't everybody know? And this is going to allow that to happen. That's the great advantage of what we've done here.
Now, have there been any other discoveries of star child-like skulls throughout the country, throughout the world?
Well, not like the star child. It's unique as far as I know, and I get probably every weird skull out there, people send me pictures, and I've never seen anything like the star child. But as I always say, the coneheads of Peru, in my opinion, have a chance to prove out to be, in their own way, every bit as weird as I'm sure the star child is going to prove out to be. But I don't think the coneheads are entirely human either. They have those brains that are absolutely twice the size of ours. And so I've always felt, even though they have human-like faces,
right,
those brains are not human. They're not even in the ballpark of human. So those creatures, whatever they were, they're not entirely human. But, you know, I've been saying literally from the beginning, for 11 years now, I've been saying somebody ought to test the coneheads. And so far as I know, nobody ever has. But if I do okay with this, got a little money in the pocket, that's one of the things I want to get on is find out about the coneheads. I'm confident it'll be the same story with them.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, I agree with you. I don't think you can elongate a skull and then have a big brain at the same time. That just doesn't happen.
Well, you can reshape a human skull. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, there's plenty of examples of that. Reshaping of a human skull is common in some cultures. But exactly what you say, you can't in that process double the brain. You just reshape the head you have. But you don't double the brain. You look at those conehead skulls, they're holding from 2,800 to 3,000 cubic centimeters of brain. You and I, we're holding about 1,400 cubic centimeters of brain. Big, big difference. So coneheads, yes, everybody, it's like watch this space. Watch the star child, Watch the Coneheads. Things are going to happen.
Things are going to happen. How do people get a hold of you, Lloyd? Website?
Website is www.starchildproject.com, starchildproject.com. And they can find out, most, if they've not heard of it, they can read up on it there. Of course, obviously, we have a book about it. We have an e-book available. I have a newsletter that people can sign up for if they want to keep in regular contact. I send messages out there 2 or 3 times a week. So if you want to keep up, get on the mailing list, and amazing things are going to happen.
Absolutely. Well, stay with us, Lloyd, because we're going to take some phone calls for the remaining half hour with you. Here's an opportunity to talk with Lloyd Pye about everything you know is wrong, including the Star Child skull. Lloyd, do you hear any more stories about the elusive Bigfoot or Sasquatch? Anything new there?
I'm sorry, say again?
Any more updates on Bigfoot or Sasquatch? Do you hear anything else?
They're the usual things going on. There's what I hear anyway is talk about trying to use various devices for hanging over their territories, hanging above their territories silently or near silently, and trying to track them that way. Using infrared cameras that are out at night, and which I think is, I think those are good ideas. But as with everything, it's the money involved. But some of those ideas are the best I've heard about how to do it so that you plan it out instead of just an accident and everybody panics and, nothing is coordinated and it doesn't get done. But if you do it right, I think you can have a planned encounter. You can maybe even have a tagging, but you don't have to kill it, but you can prove it's there. You can learn a lot. So I'm for that, and I hope that somebody manages to put that together.
Okay, to the phones we go. We'll pick it up. First of all, Dave in New Jersey, first-time caller. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Lloyd, I love your work. I really appreciate what you've done. It's been really inspiring for me. And my question has to do with the research you did on Sitchin's work and the Anunnaki and Sumerians. And I just saw this new movie that just came out called The Fourth Kind, and was very, very surprised that they actually mentioned Sumerians and a lot of the details about it. And I was wondering, it's such a huge paradigm-blowing thing, and you don't hear about it anywhere. Do you see any evidence that this might start to come out more, or more discoveries on it, or anything like that?
Well, I do, and I hate to move it away from Sitchin and all the wonderful work that he's done, and that movie, which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about it. People have written me emails saying that they really enjoyed it. But really, from my point of view, from my perspective, if the wedge is going to be the Star Child skull, you have to get the other side to acknowledge that you're in the game, or there's just, you're just talking to yourself. You're preaching to the choir. And essentially that's what we do now. Now, George preaches to the biggest choir out there every night. So it isn't that it's ineffective to do that, but to get into the mainstream, you need a wedge that changes the thinking of not only mainstream science, but particularly mainstream everybody. And I think the Star Child, the DNA, the evidence of that is so overwhelming and so convincing that once that breach in the dam occurs, I think that there will be then an ever-escalating torrent so that things like Sitchin, like hominoids, all of alternative knowledge suddenly has a lot more respect overnight. But something has to cause that breach in the dam. And personally, and it isn't just because of me, if it was somebody else doing it, I think I could look at it and say that's the area that we have the best chance of staking out our territory and making it stick.
Super. Skype line's open, by the way, and that's George 97313. Jonathan in Decatur, Georgia, east of the Rockies, you're on with Lloyd Pye. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, George. Lloyd, I'm a great admirer of your work, Lloyd. I spent a couple hours on your site a few years back. It was very impressive. A Fourth Kind movie, though. I don't know. That movie scared the hell out of me. It implied that these beings are evil, and I personally don't buy that. But, I hope somebody like Bob Bigelow American coast off the ground. I hope somebody like him, you know, shows some interest in your work. I think it's very credible. And my question is, have you seen these skulls down in a museum in Peru that are like five times the size of a normal human skull? And they look like, I don't know, to me, they look like normal human skulls, but there's two of them I've seen a picture of. This guy gave me a book some years ago. They're like five times the size. I was wondering if you were aware of these particular skulls and what you have to say about them.
Well, that's somewhat of an exaggeration. They're not really five times, but they are what we were talking about earlier, the cone heads. They're just called that collectively. But those, yes, I'm very aware of them. I, as I said earlier, I think they have as good a chance as the Star Child of proving out to be not entirely human.
Well, you know, we will get answers sooner than later, I hope, Lloyd, don't you think?
I think so now with where we are anyway now. I don't know what's going on with any of the cone heads down there. I mean, for all I know, somebody is actually working on some of them. But if they are, I don't know, you know, I don't know about it at this point. But I do know what we're doing with the Star Child, and I do know how enormous the first round of testing was in terms of its result, and how equally enormous the subsequent ones are going to be, such that eventually the day is going to come. I mean, when we get the 454 money, George, I mean, this the money to do the testing with the 454 technology, such that he can recover the whole entire genome of the Star Child. I mean, the whole entire genome in about, he says, 6 weeks, 2 months at the outside. I mean, can you imagine? You have the whole thing, 3 billion plus base pairs, and you're beginning, you at that point begin to try to establish what the percentage difference is from the human genome or the chimp genome or the Neanderthal genome, and you'll find out. And I have to tell you that from the first very initial, but looking at the percentages, it could well be, I mean, I've said all along, it has to be out in the range of chimps and gorillas because physiologically the Star Child is so different in the skull.
Yes.
And if all of those physiological changes have to be engineered by genes, the genes of the Star Child have to be dramatically different. So I've been saying for a long time, well, they have to be out in the range of chimps or gorillas. The geneticist feels, based on the early percentages, it'll be substantially more than that, which would be, I mean, my concern has been that, well, if we found out that the Star Child was only like 1% difference. Now, all humans, we're all like 99.99% the same. We're very much alike. We're not far from clones. But so that's, and chimps are like, we're 97% the same in our genome as chimps and 95% the same as gorillas. So I was worried, like, okay, if the Star Child's like around 1% different, does that make it alien? Will that be accepted as alien? That would be a hard struggle to, you know, even though all humans are 99.99,
right.
And you've got, you know, 99, where's the missing 99?
But you know, if that 1% is unfounded on any other place on this planet, then it might be considered alien.
Well, but that's the whole point. There was a lot of it that wasn't found. I mean,
yeah.
Relatively speaking. So you're moving it out maybe past chimps and gorillas and well past, which would be, there would be just no argument. It would be the equivalent of, you know, the mainstream critics and skeptics in the end are going to be faced with a mountain of evidence the size of the Great Pyramid. I mean, have you ever stood at the base of the Great Pyramid and looked up? It looks like it's so straight it's almost going to fall on you, right? I mean, it's overwhelming. That's what we need to do and what we hope we're going to be able to do and anticipate that we'll be able to do in terms of the evidence. I'm getting emails now from people who are finding out about this, and they're saying, oh, man, these guys are going to smoke you. They won't accept it. They can't accept it. It'll change everything. Well, if it was anything but DNA, yeah, all they'd have to do is say, you know, you're wrong. You made a mistake. You just don't know what you're talking about. You're not an expert. We're experts. You have to listen to us, and nobody has to listen to you. But with DNA, because it's so precise, because it's repeatable, we really have the edge here now. We really have science on our side. And I think we can win. I think we can win, not just win, but win big with this. It's now really not a question of if we can do this, as it was for 11 years. It's really, George, I promise, it's down to just when and how are we going to get it done. That's basically it.
And you're getting close. Fresno, California. Robert, you're on with Lloyd Pye on Coast to Coast. Hi, Robert.
Hi, I'm on a cell phone, so hopefully I don't lose my connection here. Okay. Listening to your recent comments, another question came to mind. Well, it's okay to be skeptical. It's okay to be skeptical in anything, but you know, a lot of topics that you have on your show, the mainstream science, they don't support it or don't even want to look at it. And I don't understand why. You know, if it doesn't exist, why don't they have an open mind? If they're scientists, shouldn't they have an open mind and be willing to look at this stuff and either prove it or disprove it?
Well, you know, that's the image that they project. It's what their publicists put out there. But the fact of the matter is, across the board, science has very narrow windows that they can explore outside what is accepted. They are perfectly willing to take an inch step forward so that everybody kind of goes together and there's not a problem. But when someone comes up and says, okay, I'm going to ask you to take a giant step forward, and everything that you think you know and everything that you've written and everything that you believe is going to have to change, but you're just going to have to suck it up and move on and adjust to it, nobody wants to do that. And that's really what they face with certain issues that they're confronted with. Things like aliens, UFOs, hominoids, things that are going to rock their world and in a way that they'll never get over in their lifetimes. The younger ones that are going to come up behind them, not a problem, because they're going to grow up with that reality, and it won't be difficult. But for the ones who are alive when the big change happens, it is traumatizing, and it just wrecks. It just wrecks their lives and their careers. So they don't want it to happen, and they work hard to avoid it.
Absolutely. Next up, we go to Greg, Olympia, Washington. It's your turn, Greg. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm not going to backstory this thing, so I hope you know what I'm talking about. Do you know anything about Oliver the chimpanzee? He's in the same boat as your skull.
No, not really. Actually, when Oliver was first moved to San Antonio, this was about probably 10 years ago, and I don't even know if Oliver's still alive, frankly. But
he's old. He's very old.
If he's still alive. Okay, well, but at the time when he had first moved to San Antonio and they were trying – now, for those who don't know, Oliver the chimp is a chimpanzee that habitually walks upright, and his owners – when he was young, treated him very much like a human, taught him how to drink beer, taught him how to smoke cigars, you know, as part of a show because he walked upright.
He's 52,
habitually.
By the way, as a chimp. He's 52 years old.
50, wow, that is really – but he's been well cared for, you know, for his life, so maybe that's it. But anyway, when he went to San Antonio to the place he was at that time, I was living in Louisiana, and they contacted me because I was doing intensive hominoid research at that time. And so I went over to take a look at him and examine him. And to my eye, and I told them, this was before they had the DNA done, I said, I'm very confident that this is nothing but a malformed a normal chimpanzee with a malformed pelvis. His pelvis was clearly narrower by far than the other chimp pelvises. So that narrowing of the pelvis forced him to be more comfortable, even though he had a very awkward walk. It was a chimp walk on chimp feet. He was a chimp in every other way except his pelvis. So I said, you know, when that DNA test is done, I'm confident he's going to come in as a pure chimp. And then he did. So that's really the story of Oliver. A very interesting character. It just shows how intelligent chimps are and how much they can be taught. But he was really not a human-chimp hybrid, which is what they were pitching him as because of the upright walking.
He kind of looks like the chimps from the Planet of the Apes, doesn't he, Lloyd?
He looks a little different in the face, George. But again, whatever birth defect, whatever hit him to cause the problem with his pelvis, gave him a little bit of a different look in the face, but not much, really, really not much. And the main thing difference was he was bald like I am. You know, I'm very – he was bald. And so it made him look and not bald as me, but he had thin hair for a chimp. And that made his face and his head look different. But if you looked at the overall shape of it, wasn't that different.
52 years old. They finally just gave him a female companion, by the way.
Did they?
Yeah.
What can he do with her? What can he do with her? He's the equivalent of an 80-year-old guy.
You never know. Let's go to Anthony in Fort Myers, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Real quick, I wanted to know Lloyd's opinion of the Dead Sea Scrolls and how it says that the Son of God came down to Earth, and they made it with the with God's creation.
Well, a little bit of Genesis here.
You're going to have to repeat that, George. I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Wanted your reaction to the Dead Sea Scrolls, and then he did a little quote of Genesis about the giants mating with women of this planet.
Well, those two things aren't related. The Dead Sea Scrolls does not have that. The Bible has that. So if we're talking about the Bible, then several of the textual parts of Genesis are directly related to the writings of the Sumerians, and that's one of them. So I think that if you choose to read Genesis with the idea that they're talking about multiple gods with small g rather than one big god with the big G, the way Sitchin describes it in his extensive works and the way I describe it to a smaller degree in Everything You Know Is Wrong, it's clear. But again, like mainstream science, mainstream religion is not going to want to open up that can of worms because it's going to turn their world inside out and upside down. So people who are in positions of authority and power tend to do everything possible to hold on to that authority and power, and they fight all they can to avoid those who would take it from them. And that's just the way of life. And so while those things are really obvious, if you look at them with certain eyes, they're very easy to blind yourself to if that's not what you want to see, hear, think, or believe.
What do you do over the next year or two, Lloyd? What are your projects?
Well, this is it. Right now, we're going to get the money, if we can, to do the testing of the Star Child all the way to the end, through and through, up and down, all the DNA that we can pull out of it and then compare it and find out what's there. At the same time that's happening, we hope to be carrying out a documentary film, filming all every step of the process. This is history. I mean, we're filming history here. And you don't get many opportunities to do this, to record it as it's unfolding. So we take that responsibility very seriously. We're going to produce a documentary film around that, around the backstory of, you know, what led up to that, and have that out as soon after the testing is completed as we can possibly do it. But we understand the responsibility that we have here, all of us who are at the core of this project. Understand that this is as big as it gets, as important as it gets. It's a huge, enormous responsibility that we all take very seriously, and we know that we're representing all of the people who are listening, and we're going to do the best job we can.
All right. Well, you keep fighting. Nice job, Lloyd.